We keep reading the ending of verse 22. Finally, we the forgiven will see the countless angels. We don't even think about this. Those completely forgiven get to meet the angels. It says, you have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly. At last, we get to meet those who watched over us while we were going through this life. Who are they? They're mighty flaming spirits. They're ministering spirits sent to minister to us. You know what it says in Hebrews 1:14? It says, are they not all ministering spirits sent forth to minister for those who shall be heirs of salvation? You and I. Now, I know there's this guardian angel stuff and people talk about their little guardian angel and they wear and keep little angels. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about mighty flaming spirit beings. The Hebrews 1:14 says, are the ministering spirits that minister for all of us who are heirs of salvation. Now, we don't think about that very much. And the Bible doesn't talk about it very much. But it is a reality. We get to meet those myriads of angels. Moses tells us that myriads of the holy ones attended the giving of the law. That's what he says in Deuteronomy 33 and verse 2. So when he was getting those tablets written by the finger of God and he was carrying them down the Mount Sinai back to the people, he's talking about it in Deuteronomy 33, and he says that myriads of holy ones attended that. From Daniel, we find that thousands upon thousands attend the Ancient of Days. In fact, Daniel goes on to say 10,000 times 10,000 are always standing before him. So there are hundreds of millions that don't do anything but stand in reverence before God. And they're just unbelievable, uncountable numbers of these ministering spirits, these flaming spirits. That's Daniel 7:10. David said the chariots of God are 10,000s and thousands of thousands in Psalm 68. But we seldom reflect on what these ministers of God do for God. I'll just read a few from church history that great saints have recorded the interactions they've had with angels. In fact, one commentator wrote, passing in and out of our lives, they move around us and over us, just as Jacob of old saw when he saw that ladder and the angels of God coming and going. Sometimes they protect us, God's chosen ones. For example, John Payton. Remember the great missionary of 150 years ago that was out in New Hebrides at Vanuatu Island? This is what he wrote in his journal. The tall men in shining garments surrounded Mr. and Mrs. John Payton. And that's why they weren't eaten by the cannibals, because God wanted them to preach the gospel. And Payton said he didn't see them. But later he asked the natives that came to Christ and repented of their cannibalism and their evil works of darkness. And he says, how come you guys didn't, you know, come crack our heads open and boil us? And they said, oh, in his journal, he said, the tall men in shining garments that always surrounded your hut, they came with you. And Payton, in later life, the great Presbyterian missionary, said those were the angels, the ministering spirits, the Hebrews 1:14 team. Others, Marie Monson in northern China back in the 40s before the communist takeover, was protected by tall soldiers with shining faces, the people in what we would call unreached people groups that she reached. After their conversion, said that they asked where the other ones were. The soldiers that had accompanied her to their village, they had the shining faces that she never saw. Or on another occasion, at the great Rift Valley Academy that has a long and happy history for the Lord, it's recorded in their journal that huge men dressed in white with flaming swords surrounded the Rift Valley Academy during an uprising where all the missionary children were. And those who came in from their war rampage in the city and were coming to kill the missionaries' children saw, and this is what one of them, who later came to Christ, said that huge men dressed in white with flaming swords had surrounded the academy. Or on another occasion, Clyde Taylor, who later became the founder of the NAE, the National Association of Evangelicals, when he was a missionary, he said that hundreds of men dressed in white with swords and shields stood guard over his hut. That's what he was told when he left the field after a long and successful career in a primitive tribal area. And when he asked those who came to Christ as he was leaving, he says, what was it that kept you from killing us. And they said that. Oliver Fleming Leafield wrote this about the Aka Indians, Dawa and Kimo. After the execution, the martyrdom of the five missionaries in the jungle of Ecuador, this is what these two told her. They said, while the faithful, you know, Jim Elliott and Nate Saint and all of them were being killed, as the Akas looked up over the tops of the trees, they saw a large group of people all singing, and it looked as if there were hundreds of flashlights. Just that the angels that were there attending the martyrdom of these saints. But the emphasis of this passage that we're looking at, verse 22, is not so much the angels' care of us, but that we get to join them at last. We're in this festive assembly. In the ancient cultures, the word that's in verse 22 to this festive assembly, literally the general assembly, that's actually the first part of verse 23, this general assembly is this idea of a national assembly, and it's the word used for the Olympic Games, when they would all gather together to have this joyful time of the Olympic Games in Greek culture. And God's people are gathered together, and we are finally with those flaming spirits, the angels, who ministered to us, almost unknown to us, who were heirs of salvation. And we get to meet them. I think that they're invisible because we're not supposed to honor them. We're not supposed to focus on them, but they're there. And they're always surrounding us and accomplishing God's purposes. Well, one more. Look at the continuation of verse 23. To the general assembly and the church of the firstborn, look what it says, whose names are written in heaven. Thirdly, we the forgiven get to join the saints of all the ages. Now, I don't want you to miss this, because what we're looking at is the result of our complete forgiveness. And what God does is, He gets us to the heavenly city that we've always longed for. He gets us finally surrounded by all these flaming spirits that have ministered to us to get us there, safe and sound. And then we get to join, look what He says, we get to join the church of the firstborn whose names are written in heaven. Hebrews tells us that Jesus is not ashamed to call us brothers and sisters. So with Him we are sharing in the inheritance promised by God the Father. The saints of all the time, all the ages, we get to join them with Christ. Now think about that. In the ancient world, all the rights of inheritance went to the firstborn alone. The firstborn got the inheritance rights. That's why Jacob was deceiving to get him from Esau. But Jesus Christ, because He completely forgave us, allows us to be what Paul says in Romans 8:17, co-heirs with Christ. All of us. It's not like Paul was a co-heir and we're kind of a sixth level or 36th level down, you know, when they divide the inheritance out. You know, in a will, they give, you know, this part and this part and this part and this part, and the big parts go, and then there are the little parts left. No, we're all co-heirs with Christ. You understand what that means? God the Father has given to Jesus an inheritance, and Jesus doesn't pass on to us as sub-heirs. He says that we are co-heirs with Christ. It's an amazing thought to think what that means, the extent to which His complete forgiveness has elevated us. The British commentator, Bishop Westcott, said that we are all a society of eldest sons of God. We all get the oldest son inheritance because of the work of Christ. There are no second or third or fourth sons and daughters in the church. We all get the big inheritance. Our names are written in heaven along with all of those who are already there. In other words, we're all the body of Christ. They're all awaiting us. We come one by one, escorted by Christ. We are one with Him. We are brothers and sisters. We are united with our entire family that is safely made at home. Jesus said, I'll not share communion again. I'll not celebrate communion again until I celebrate it with you in my Father's kingdom. What He was saying is, I'm going to wait till I get all of you safely home. Until you are, look at Hebrews 12, 22 and 23, until you come to Mount Zion, until you and I come to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, until we get to meet that innumerable company of angels, those flaming spirits that have ministered to us, and until we become the festive, joyous, general assembly, the church of the firstborn who are registered in heaven. Now the question is, do you have your reservation? Are you registered in heaven? You wouldn't think of walking in high season to some hotel like during the Olympics and go to Beijing and say, hey, I want a room. There isn't going to be a room during the Olympics in 08. Try and go during the World Cup. There's no room in those hotels. You've got to get a reservation. And what he's saying here is that all who get there are those who are registered in heaven. And those are just the first three. He goes through four more results of our complete forgiveness. But finally, the forgiven will join the saints of all times. The forgiven, those whose names are written in heaven, will join with Jesus.